Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, Tuesday afternoon, January 17th, on a gray Chicago afternoon. Thanks very much for tuning in. I'm Steve Bertrand. We've got the usual cast of characters today. Suzanne Muchin will be along a little bit later. You know, we talk about women in business, women in the workplace, things like that. And it looks like this march on Saturday is getting, well, it's bigger than I expected. I didn't make too much of it, and turns out I'm wrong about that, too. So we'll talk to Suzanne a little bit later. Also, I told you the guy, the CEO from Waverly Lab will be here talking about a new earpiece that can allow you to translate, listen to people speak in, say, French or Spanish to you. It will translate it in real time and tell you what they're saying. So that is the cutting edge. Speaking of cutting edge, John Najarian is on a phone line, joins us most Tuesdays to talk about what's going on Wall Street. You see him on CNBC and on Twitter at John Najarian. John, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Great to be with you, Stephen. Thank you very much.
I don't know where to start with you, mister, because there's so much going on today. I'm interested in, and you can steer me too, because you know better, but I'm interested in, still in Donald Trump and his impact on business. Now, we had the CEO of Boeing sort of come calling again today at Trump Tower, and he came out and said that he and the president-elect are on the same page when it comes to cost-cutting and all of that. It wasn't long ago that the president-elect was calling him out for the price of the new Air Force One.
Yeah, in addition to the Boeing, then you had General Motors today an announcement about lots of jobs and another $1 billion into some of their plants here in the U.S.
And not only that, they said they would move some production out of Mexico and back to the U.S.
Yeah, and I think one of the misconceptions about what Mr. Trump's trying to accomplish, obviously he's trying to get jobs back for American workers, but he's also just trying to get the trade policy, the deficits that we've got, back a little closer to in line. And by that, Stephen, I mean that, you know, we sell a lot into Mexico, obviously, just to pick one border that we cross, and they sell a lot back into us. To the extent that it's good for both parties, that's great. To the extent that it's tens of billions of dollars more going out to Mexico because they're selling goods into our country, that's not so good for American workers. The bigger that number gets, potentially the Americans are buying things, I guess, cheaper because the peso has collapsed. But the bad news for American workers is the lack of those jobs. Now, right-sizing that trade so that you have cars being sold from here down into Mexico and corresponding cars from Mexico back into the U.S., to the extent that that goes to a more of a neutral stance, that's a win-win and should be something positive for all of us.
Do you think that the president-elect has a cohesive strategy when it comes to all of this? And I ask not to... it's a genuine question. It's a sincere question, you know, because I see some of his cabinet appointees saying things contrary to what he says. And I want to know that he's got a real cohesive strategy. Do you think he does?
Well, I know two of his, well, three now, because my friend Anthony Scaramucci was just named to a position that I think is basically the position that Valerie Jarrett held in the Obama White House. And Anthony Scaramucci's a big Wall Street guy, knows trade very well, and of course knows markets. But you've also got Larry Kudlow, another gentleman that works with us here on CNBC that sadly, I guess, we will not be seeing as often on air because he's going to be taking a position with the administration. And Stephen Moore, who has consulted to that team. So I think he's got good people in place that really understand how this works, Stephen. And none of them are going to claim responsibility for his tweets. But again, none of them quite have the desire to be up at 3:30 in the morning to putting that information together like the president-elect does.
Well, you know, right. And so you just kind of restated the problem, maybe, because it seems like this General Mattis is a great guy and speaks very well. But Donald Trump, I'm not sure that Donald Trump is going to follow Mattis. I'm not sure that Donald Trump's going to follow Scaramucci and those guys. And that's what I'm wondering. You have confidence that he will?
I do, because I think of him a lot like a general in that he's picking good commanders under him. And I think Mattis, to the extent that there are some things that I'm not happy, and I bet most of us would not be happy about the United States' burden as far as NATO, but I don't think we do abandon it. And I think Mattis would be one of those voices to tell the president-elect, no, we shouldn't do that, but we do need to modify it and make sure that it's fairer, just like the trade policy, so that people are carrying more of the burden than just the United States carrying, you know, the vast majority. I'm not talking 10% United States versus what everybody else is carrying. I'm talking about 55-60% of the costs of maintaining the forces over in Europe versus what Germany and France and Italy and England, you know, large economies in Europe, and what they have failed to contribute, I think is one of the reasons that this is an issue for the president-elect.
You know, a year ago at this time, you were snacking on fine chocolate and enjoying the slopes of Switzerland, right? You were at Davos.
Ready to head back there in just a little bit.
Are you? Sir. Good for you. Well, so the president of China beat you to it. President Xi was there and spoke today. First time I think a Chinese leader has addressed this. And the wire accounts, the stories I'm reading are sort of that he's trying to move into this vacuum as a free trader. What do you make of that?
Well, yeah, and I think it's great that they had him at Davos. Davos is that, you know, the World Economic Forum is a great place for ideas to be brought forward. But generally they are wrong, not in their goals, perhaps, but in what they think will happen.
Well, they are like the ivory tower that the whole world's been voting against, right?
Exactly right. Yeah, the globalization and so forth. That is what people have been pushing back against in the UK, in the United States, in France. We'll see about Italy as that new coalition government comes together. But I think overall, having people get together and discussing matters of global trade and climate change and things like that is a good thing. But obviously, I think they, in general, have to do a better job listening than just dictating. So I think if they are a sounding board and an area where they have actually had some considered response to things like Brexit and Mr. Trump in the United States and perhaps some of the other changes that are coming around the rest of the world, I think that'll be a positive out of Davos. But up until now, it's mainly been dictation from them, not so much listening.
That's John Najarian from CNBC and all sorts of places talking about. We haven't talked too much about what's going on Wall Street today. What's the picture look like today?
Well, I think there are some really interesting things going on because, again, General Motors just announced that they're putting more work into the United States, more focus, bringing jobs back. Walmart just made another announcement like that, as you cited, Steve. Boeing and Ford, there are so many examples of it now. That's fantastic, including Amazon with 100,000 jobs that they allege they'll be able to create in the next 18 months. So there's an optimism out there, and I think overall, nothing really happens on the Friday changeover from the one administration to the other, because all of this, we've obviously traded ahead, looking at what is going to happen, as well as hoping as far as these both trade policies, taxes, and rollbacks and regulations and things like that. So overall, little dips like we had Friday and again today that usually are met pretty quickly with buying. That seems to be more or less the same pattern we've been in for several months now.
All right. Now, since you know all these economic guys, you think Kudlow could get me into the Oval Office? I've always wanted to see it.
Well, if you ever want to go and you give me a heads up, I'll get you in there.
I'll do it.
Again, with Scaramucci being in that position, I think I've got a pretty good in with the new administration there.
John Najarian, I will take you up on that. Good to talk to you.
Thank you, Stephen.
Twelve twenty-three. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much for tuning in. Hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand and also on Facebook. I have a page there, Steve Bertrand. So follow me there as well. Boy, there's some days when you're out working in the yard, you work up a sweat, and nothing satisfies it like a good old hard cider.
Is that right?
Andrew Herman is here from DNA Info, and we talk about different openings and closings around town, and we sort of have a beer flavor, I guess, or an alcohol flavor this week.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cidery, right? Cider is becoming big and popular, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Do you like cider at all?
You know, I've never had it.
Never had it?
Never had it.
You'll be okay without that, I think.
I've heard it described as sort of like, it kind of pours like beer, but it has a dry taste to it, like champagne.
The ones I've always had were like apple cider, hard apple cider, and there's a lot more action going on to me in beer, but cider's become the big thing, and now Chicago has its own cidery.
Yeah, so this is Right Bee Cider, B-E-E
right
Cider.
Right Bee, like the bee, the buzzing bee?
Right, and we'll get to the name here in a minute, but they have opened a manufacturing plant in Hermosa at 1830 North Costner, and they moved here from the suburbs, so that was kind of cool for the city. It's five times the size of the original location, and it was started by a husband and wife team, Charlie Davis and Kate Morgan. And we have some pictures on our site, and it shows these huge 60-barrel fermenters
right.
in this place.
And they're doing well, right? They were just allowing taps in a few restaurants, and now they're starting to bottle it?
Yeah, so they're bottling it up. You can buy it at Binney's and Whole Foods. The husband, Charlie Davis, has a background in craft brewing. And the way the company started is kind of cute. He was dating his future wife, Katie Morgan, and he wanted to impress her. So he made up an apple cider for her, and that's why he calls it Right Beside Her.
So he wanted to be right beside her.
Right.
So you read it, looks like a bee making apple cider, but no.
But it does have honey. They get their apples from Pennsylvania and New York, and the honey comes from a local company, Westside Bee Boys, it's quite popular.
All right, Right Bee Cider. Mm-hmm. Give them a shot and give it a try. And I mentioned earlier that there's one bar. In fact, Kim Gordon, you don't have your headphones on. That's okay. Kim had been to the Northrop or the Northman?
Northman.
The Northman.
The Northman, yeah. There's a cider-only bar in Chicago.
Was there Saturday night.
How was it, Kim?
It
did
was
you do
fantastic.
Okay?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well,
did
great.
You sample several different ciders?
We did, actually. You could get a little flight, and they gave you all different ciders from all around the world. We had tried some from France and England and then, U.S. ciders, and they bring you a little sample to try. Everybody gets a sample to try before you sit down.
Uh-huh.
So, and their food looked great. Their food was good. Yeah.
Cider something you like?
Yes.
Okay.
It does kind of, and it does taste a lot like a combination of a little apple cider with some sparkle and champagne. But they are. Some are dry, some are sweeter. It just depends on your taste.
Do they take cash there?
Of course they do.
Don't say of course, right, Andrew?
That's right. I have this other place, Laganza's On Tour Brewing. That's in Westtown at 1725 West Hubbard. It's a brewery, 75 seats, has a tasting room. But the interesting thing to me is that they only accept credit cards.
No cash. Unless you want a tip. They'll take a tip in cash.
Right. And so the owner says, told our reporter that by accepting only credit cards, it's a more efficient way to do it. You don't have to have change. You don't have to run to the bank. And this is kind of a common thing in New York.
Interesting thing, right? Because people would, some places don't take credit cards. So you have to pay a fee.
Right.
But these guys have figured, well, it's worth it because of the extra hassle of dealing with the banks and all that.
Yeah, the processing fee on a credit card is about 2%, so that comes out of your profits. But 80% of people use credit cards at restaurants anyway.
We were talking off the air. I am cashless. I am almost completely cashless.
Yeah, so it evidently cuts theft. At least these are what the people in New York say, and you don't have to reconcile all the dollars and the pennies and everything at the right. end of the day, and you can only have one system.
And name of that place again?
This is the Laganza's On Tour Brewing at 1725 West Hubbard.
And they're in quite a spot, right? I mean, there are all these breweries now, or brew pubs, that are right in that area, sort of a new little industry.
Right, not too far from United Center.
Andrew Herman from DNA Info, thanks for coming by.
All right.
Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 1235. Suzanne Muchin is in the studio. She's the co-host of The Big Payoff, the podcast you can hear at WGNplus.com. And we talk about women and the workplace. And generally, we come in, you disagree, I give you the last word. And then once you're out of the studio, I explain to everyone how I was right.
It is true. You kind of take the last word only because you're in front of that switchboard.
No, because it's my show.
Oh,
that's
ouch.
Why. However, I will say in this instance that I undersold or misread this whole march on Saturday You know, we've been talking about it a while, right? They tried to get the permit in D.C. and then they had to move, and now there's one in Chicago. And I was at my health club this morning, and a couple of women who I know were sort of arguing over whether or not to go. And one woman was like, "We got to stand up. We've got to do something."
And are you going?
No.
And why? I'm curious. And this was a real thing. So my husband came in the other morning and said, "Do you want me to go to the march with you?"
Mm-hmm.
And I had to pause for a minute because I wasn't quite sure what my answer was. His question was, is this a women bonding thing or right. should guys go? And I thought about it and then talked to a bunch of women and they said, no, men should come. Men should come. This is really, and part of the problem is this has been branded as a women's march. But in fact, the agenda, if you really read the platform, it's more of a social justice, civil rights.
Is it? Because everything I'm reading, it's women's issues.
Not alone.
Which can
not
be
only.
Men's issues, too. I don't mean to say
they
that
should
it's
be
not.
Men's
right.
So, I would encourage men who are listening to this show, if their wives or sisters or daughters are going, ask the question, can I come along? Oh, wait, are you squinting at me? Like, why would they do that?
Yeah.
Steve.
No. I'm squinting at you because would you ever say, ask your husbands, can I go with you?
No. Well, for the same reason my husband asked me, which is I think the perception is that this is a women power, girl power thing. And if that's how you feel, you don't want your husband or your father coming with you.
Well, then you should just deal with it because your husband gets to make up his own mind. And if he wants to go, he should go.
So if he were here, he would say that my response to him was, David, do you want to come? Up to you.
Okay. And is he going to go?
I hope so.
Yeah, boy, I would love to get off the hook on that one.
Well, also, you live in the suburbs. For us, it's a quick Uber ride.
Yeah, and so it is downtown. It's Saturday. Where is it?
Grant Park. Although they're meeting now, it's Jackson and Columbus.
And I'm seeing a bunch of new hats around town.
Oh, Steve. So Steve refuses to actually call the hats by their official name. I just want all of our listeners to know that.
Not like it's an official name. But
I gave you a term to use. Go ahead and use the term we decided on.
A cat hat?
The cat hat.
Okay.
It's called the pussy hat for most women. It's a pink hat with ears that you wear, and the ears are supposed to be pointing directly at Donald Trump. And it was something that came out after Hillary lost and all of the I'm a nasty woman and those kind of negative things came out, that some women started knitting these hats as a way to sort of generate non-aggressive, although it's a little aggressive.
Oh, I think it's pretty aggressive.
Right? But they're everywhere.
True? I've not seen, I said I've seen them, but I haven't.
I was saying that not only were knit shops in Chicago, I mean, lines around the corner, pink yarn being sold out. I was at my book group last night. One of the book group members, Jennifer Farrington, who's the CEO of the Chicago Children's Museum, spent the whole time knitting. This is a thing. It's a real thing. Do you want me to bring you one?
Yeah, that would be great. I would love to have one.
Would you?
Well, I don't know what I would do with it. I'm not going to wear it.
You're not.
I'd love to see it.
I feel like we should have some challenge at some point where we like flip a coin or bet something and the prize, if you lost, would be, or the punishment would be you had to wear that.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it.
No?
I mean, even if I lost, I'd say I would do it, and then I wouldn't do it. All right, so people are coming downtown for that. People who I'm assuming can travel on their own or take Metro.
They can travel, take Metro. And my understanding is it is an actual march. You're going to be moving in a course that's around the city, not too far. I think it's probably, you know, a mile or something like that in total. And then there's going to be speakers back at Grant Park.
Okay. So so next we're going to talk about how to get there from Washington.
Yes.
But before we do that, really the story there is how it's fostering new business.
Right.
I didn't know until I was reading up on that Airbnb got its first big boost from the Obama inauguration.
Yes, that was really the first push where there was nowhere to stay in D.C. And people started saying, why don't I rent out my...
And there was this thing, right? There was an Airbnb, but no one really used it.
It wasn't people... Look, it was at the start of the sharing economy. People were used to it, kind of, but that was really the big moment. And so now the march is inspiring all these entrepreneurs to have these creative businesses, both for housing people and for transportation.
And so there's this company called Skedaddle.
Great name.
Which is a very cool name.
Few good brand names not taken. That's a good one.
And what do they do?
So you can rent a bus. What you do is you go on to the app, you say where you want to go, and once 10 people, a critical mass of 10 people, want to go to the same destination, Skedaddle arranges for a private bus and will take you there. And part of it, they're trying to promote community because they assume if you want to go to the same place as a bunch of other people, maybe you'd have something in common. So they are getting just inquiry after inquiry of having people wanting to arrive in Washington on the 21st.
So the idea is if there were 10 of you in a group, you could call someone and rent your own bus.
I'm just saying, in general. Sure.
But if there's one or two of you,
right,
and you don't have the wherewithal of the group to rent a bus, you
bus sharing.
Bus sharing.
Yeah, it's a great idea. And they said from a business model, they make more money the more people they put on the bus, which makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. But if it's a minimum of 10, they'll commit to getting you a private bus.
And it's taken off.
Yeah.
It's taken off so much for this event, right?
Yes.
They've noticed that this event is really driving it.
And the question is that sustainable? You know, for Airbnb, obviously it was a kickoff to a massive business opportunity. For Skedaddle, I think in an era in which people really are shunning the idea of having their own cars, using their own cars, car sharing, ride sharing, this could work.
Well, it would have to be almost event driven, though, wouldn't it? I mean,
maybe, but that's not a bad idea. If you think about all, for example, like the concerts and Lollapalooza and everything else.
Football game and champagne.
Yeah. There's a lot of opportunity.
All right. So it's called Skedaddle.
Yeah.
And we'll follow that.
Yes.
You have a podcast that you want to talk about
as well? I do. So we launched our 2017 today.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear it on WGN.com. You can listen on iTunes, anywhere you want. And we're interviewing, for the start of our season, Ikram Goldman. Do you know who Ikram is?
I do not.
Oh, Steve.
I should.
Every now and then, I feel like I disappoint you, don't I? You so disappoint me.
I'm sorry.
Did you not know who Beyonce was? There was something when she was...
No, I know the Beyonce.
okay.
I didn't know her song. I couldn't name her song.
I'm so pained. Okay, so Ikram Goldman is a force of nature in fashion. In the industry, they will literally say at the fashion shows, afterwards you're successful if you get an order from Bergdorf Goodman, Barney's, and Ikram. Her store is right over here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big red building on Huron Street.
Keep going. It's not going to work.
Oh, God, Steve.
I just don't know it. I'm not a fashion person.
Okay, she's a cafe. Anyway, she's a force of nature. She's a big name, and she recently started performing as a singer.
Really?
With the band Pink Martini.
Ah, Pink Martini has the guy in it, the NPR host.
Who's in the band?
Yes.
Well, not Tom Lauderdale. That's his.
Ari Shapiro?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So interesting you say that, because part of what why they wanted Ikram to come on is they were training Ari and others to sing an Arabic song. She's an Israeli Arab, and she was a voice coach for them. And in doing that, they recognized how wonderful her voice was.
Well, I go see her now because I like Ari Shapiro.
Okay,
so she's talking to you on the podcast.
So she's talking to us about what that experience of performing with Pink Martini. Look, if you're a highly successful professional and have a job, a full life, how does something else come into your life? How do you make room for that? How does you let yourself sort of dive into something wholly new?
And how do you know when it's true?
Yes.
Right? That's kind of the thing. You can be infatuated with something and not know that it's truly you and is going to last. And
you know what a good litmus test for that is? When you lose yourself time-wise, when you find that you're doing it, you kind of lose track of time.
Right.
It just doesn't feel to you like work or anything else.
It's not a perfect litmus test because that applies to me in solitaire.
In life in general.
Right, okay. Uh-huh. Suzanne Mushin, so check out that podcast.
Thank you.
At WGNradio.com.
On the main site, you go to... I think they have a tab on the top for podcasts.
Excellent. Good to see you.
Good to see you,
Steve. Have a great time on Saturday.
Thank you.
And we'll talk about it next Tuesday.
I can bring a picture of you like on a stick.
Do that.
Like your
face. So I can be there, yeah.
We'll try to make that go viral.
Perfect. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It is 12:50 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, 720 WGN. Thanks very much for tuning in. Kim Gordon is in the newsroom as we continue to watch all of the goings-on in Washington in preparation for the inauguration. You can hear the inaugural address along with actually the presidential swearing-in coming up on Friday at about 11 o'clock on 720 WGN. President Obama has a news conference, his last, that we will broadcast as well on 720 WGN. And, you know, I was talking to John Najarian earlier today about the president and business. And Teddy Roosevelt used the bully pulpit when it came to foreign policy. Donald Trump so far very much is using the bully pulpit when it comes to business in America.
In the modern day, it sounds especially with Twitter.
Yeah, 140 characters. And one of the things I'm interested in, and, you know, he seems to be having results so far. I mean, you've got GM going out of its way to say we're doing this. You've got the CEO of Boeing, who was, you know, very publicly chastised for the contract for the future Air Force One. And they were only living up to an agreement that they'd signed with the Congress. But he sort of appeared chaste at Trump Tower today. So it seems as if the president-elect is getting some results.
It does seem like he's getting results, you know, but is this the honeymoon period? We're just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, well, I don't know how much of a honeymoon it is, because there also was an ABC News poll out today and showed his favorability rating was, what, I think it was
the lowest ever,
yeah,
I think.
47%.
Yeah.
And if you think of it, generally, once a president is elected, as president-elect, there is sort of this warm glow about him. So those who were sort of indifferent, or even those who voted against him or her, tend to warm up to the person in the weeks or months before they take the oath of office. That is not the case. I think, in fact, his approval rating is lower than it was on Election Day.
Well, and I always see if there's a president that people necessarily didn't want to elect or didn't love, that sometimes people kind of mellow out a bit after they see them interacting with their families at the parade and watching the parade and during the inauguration. So
I don't know. Well, I think he got that.
He's just a different character than all the previous ones. Time's going to tell.
Let's take the next 2 hours and talk about all the ways things are going to be different. It is a remarkable thing, and I think he did get a little bit of a warm-up after his election night speech. You know, his son was on the podium or on the stage trying to stay awake and all of that. But I just think he has squandered that with his tweets.
Yeah. Tweets hurt.
Tweets hurt. Tweets can help, you know. And they did help, I think. They were very political and maybe right-minded, if not policy, at least politically speaking, when it comes to what he did with Boeing and what he did with Lockheed. But when you fire off against John Lewis, even though John Lewis, quote-unquote, started it, if you want to go to the schoolyard, I just don't think it serves the future president of the United States very well to take on a civil rights
icon.
You just don't, and you stay out of it. And by the same token, you know, the Democrats are going to have to find a way to do something with this guy. For 8 years, they decried Mitch McConnell talking about how he said early in Obama's administration that the goal was to make sure he didn't win re-election. That's not the right thing to do. Democrats can't do that. And frankly, I'm a little dismayed to see there are, 40, almost 50 now lawmakers who are not going to go to the inauguration. I don't think that's any way to start things either.
I have a little bit of a problem with that, too, because it's not really about the man. It's about the office and what that means to the country.
Right. I mean, I think you can show up and you can be a witness to the changing of power, to the transfer of power, you know, and stand as a powerful witness to that without necessarily agreeing or looking as if you endorse one policy or one politician or another.
Yeah, I was watching actually the Hamilton's America last night on PBS. I'd saved it for the week before I go to Hamilton, and I'm going this week. And they were
any extras?
No, sorry.
I'll ask again when
you'll
get closer.
You'll be on my list. but anyway, they were just talking about that peaceful transition of power. It doesn't happen anywhere else, and it's just so important that we all keep that into perspective.
Yeah, and as I was talking to John Najarian about earlier, I wonder, and I genuinely wonder, if Donald Trump has a policy agenda, and I hope he does. You know, I want him to have a plan and stick to it, because it seems as if he's sending his guys to Capitol Hill. They're testifying, saying what mature policymakers want to hear them say, and then Donald Trump isn't backing it up when it comes to his tweets. And he even said, I think, in the lobby of Trump Tower at one point, he said, "No, I love it. I want them to say what they think, even if they disagree with me." Well, okay, that's great, but I want to know where they disagree with you, and if they do, who wins? I would think the president-elect would win.
Right, and his first lesson needs to be you can't be friends with everyone, and you can't make everybody happy, even though he spews hatred and, you know, rude comments. I think overall he just wants people to like him.
He acts very differently, I think, when someone's in his presence as opposed to when someone's under his skin.
Right, and that's the problem. We don't know who the real Donald Trump is.
Well, maybe we do. Maybe he's showing us. I don't know.